Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And last night, Lakers were seconds away from making it into play-in territory for the first time this season. But Luka Doncic had other plans. The game started with a rough first quarter for Lakers. Dallas jumped all over the Lakers, led by 14 after the first. But Lakers battled back, played really good defense in particular over the last three quarters. And despite a pretty rough shooting night from LeBron James, made it all the way back. And then up three with a few seconds left, and we'll get into, I think, the specifics of this play later, because I think it has a subtopic to it that I can't believe we've never discussed before, but Luka hits a step back three. Similar situation happens in overtime. Luka sends it into double OT, and then Dallas eventually outlasts the Lakers. So there have been a lot of these this year, D, a lot of these heartbreakers, last minute, not able to close it out, overtime losses in wild competitive games. But it was a great game. It was a game, you know, very physical. A friend of mine texted me, was like, this is a 90s playoff game we're watching. I was like, yeah. And there was a lot to like about it, but Lakers came up short. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, man. That was a tough one.
I'm tired of these, honestly.
Yeah.
The Lakers are in no position to get like moral victories at this point. They need these wins in the standings. Mm-hmm. I think they need the wins for morale. I think wins like this are particularly hard on the team from an emotional standpoint and from a frustration standpoint. And I think frustrations could easily transform into other emotions that make it difficult to rally around the flag, because they know they're shorthanded, and winning amplifies that feeling of we have enough, and losing Mike in the manner that they lose in these games, particularly when they're shorthanded. I don't want to say that this is what's happening, but I know what can happen is a certain amount of resentment around this idea of like, we're out here battling as hard as we can to win. And if we only had X, we would be better and we would have won this game. And that's a dangerous place to get to mentally. And I'm not saying the Lakers are there. I'm not even saying that they're getting there. I'm just saying that that is a natural offshoot to me of losses like this. And so I'm tired of these as a fan. I feel for the players and I feel for the team and I feel for the head coach. Darvin took some blame, Mike, after this one for the management of the last play. Pete, I don't know if we want to get into this aspect of the conversation now.
Honestly, it was something that we've probably covered more than 500 games together doing this pod. And I don't know your philosophy, and I want to hear Mike's too, on like fouling up three in the last possession. I just can't believe it's never come up. So please, I want to hear Mike's overall thoughts first, but yes. I'd love to circle back to that point.
Man, I think the game in general. So I was jumping around a little bit last night because our boy Michael Thompson was in the Bahamas for one game. So he'll be back, I think, for the next one. And so it's a little bit, I have to kind of switch a different part of my brain on, you know, to where I'm a little bit more locked in on the game itself and just trying to analyze what happens in it. And I'm doing a little bit less of the kind of overall monitoring and checking some stats and trying piecing things together and, you know, getting thoughts. And so I, for that game, it was just so obvious to me early that the Lakers were rusty. And it was weird because it was like the typical game when you've been gone for a while, but they had only been gone for the weekend, but it felt like a while because of the buildup of all the previous long trips, A, right. And the fact that it was a back-to-back and the fact that there was an extra off day in between. So that almost added to, and it's just something that happens. Like, this is not a critique. This is just something I'm like, they're not only are they a little bit rusty and not sharp, but it's another new lineup. And LeBron has not played since Saturday night, you know, and all of those things came together. But what I felt like was the good thing for the Lakers was that was the first quarter. And therefore, even though Dallas got up damn near 20 points, you could tell like they were going to start playing better. They were going to start figuring it out. The crowd was getting into the game. And so a run was coming. And they sort of, at a certain point of the game, they just found the identity that they had been playing with. Not as well as they were playing like throughout that 5-game winning streak, but I just felt like that general level of competition and the way that they were starting to get a couple of stops and to run and like, all of that stuff was starting to coalesce to the point where, you know, they rode that all the way to a late lead. And so the game itself to me was fine. Like I thought that they more or less competed and they kind of found some of their mojo. But now this is where I kind of turn to you guys to an extent, because crunch time, I was not able to be as locked in because I was up at the top of the, this is going to sound dumb for anybody that hasn't actually been to the arena, but the radio broadcast and the TV broadcast where Bill and Stu and Michael and John are is where Chick used to like to be up at the top of the lower bowl.
Bird's eye view. Exactly. Yes.
Chick like the bird's eye view. And so when I'm doing the game, when I'm typically down on the sideline, I'm right pretty close adjacent to the bench on the opposite side of the court, but close. Like I can get to the bench in a, you know, 20-second walk. And so I'm like, I'm watching, but then I have to go down for the potential walk-off interview for TV. So I'm basically just much less locked in on actually getting a good angle because sometimes I'm walking in the middle of a play. And this is, but my general sense of it was that it was the same as it's been all year, which has been bad. And I've got the clutch time stats for the Lakers up, but this is where I want to kick it to you guys, not just for the play where whether they should have fouled or blitzed, which is kind of what I asked Darvin about, but essentially what happened in that specific game, Pete, that was endemic to what's been happening in crunch time for all of these games the Lakers seem to be losing.
To me, it's the jump shooting. And I've always been with you on the we talk too much about jump shooting topic. That said, you do need to be able to hit jump shots. Like the way Dallas defended us, their perimeter players to a great extent, it was almost they're zoned up and they're standing right on the elbows. And so one thing that a defense can do is make you take jump shots, right? Like it's something that they can force you. It'll be open, but they can make you take jumpers. And so I'd say about 6 weeks ago or so on the pod, after one of those games where a team put, I can't remember the game specifically, but one of those games where a team put their slow-footed center on Russ and he couldn't make a jump shot. And I'm scrolling through the play-by-play of every game of the year, looking at, wondering, what is Russell Westbrook shooting on his jump shots in crunch time? And I think it was like 18% or something like that at the time. It was like 3-for-16, something like that.
Right now it's 29%, 9-for-31.
In crunch time stats?
Yeah.
On jumpers?
Okay. Yeah. And then LeBron is 20-for-48, 41%. But LeBron from 3-for-17. Yes. And Russ 3-for-8.
So I'm talking specifically about jump shots. When LeBron's been good down the stretch this year, it's been mostly like I'm able to get to the basket and there's nothing you can do about it. In going through the play-by-play of each game on my phone at, you know, 1 a.m, I had the same thought as I did with Russ about 6 weeks ago. What is LeBron shooting on jump shots in the last 5 minutes of a close game? I have him at 7-for-31 overall, which is 23% on just his jumpers, and then 4-for-26, 15% on his threes during those types of situations in those close games. And so, like, that to me, the make or miss league, it's the difference that the result of that game is the difference between Luka hitting some daggers and LeBron not being able to hit a jumper. He's now shooting 28.5% from three on the year. So this isn't just a crunch time thing, but that's the thing that really stands out to me on our downstretch offense. yesterday's pod was about our closing lineups and some of the issues that can be presented there. But LeBron not being able to shoot jumpers during that time too has a it adds to the existing issues.
Yes, Jason Kidd, former Lakers assistant coach, who I'm sure Mike was an important part of the defensive game plan against the Houston Rockets in the 2019-20 playoffs, whose starting backcourt consisted of James Harden and one Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook came into the game last night, and so this is a pivot off of the crunch time discussion for a second, but Russell Westbrook came into the game, and Jason Kidd instantly deployed Dwight Powell on him. So Powell was guarding Russ from the very instant that Russ came into the game. So this was not a late game adjustment where suddenly, like early in the season, where suddenly Ivica Zubac is on Russ, where Zubac had been guarding Anthony Davis for the rest of the game. Or Yusuf Nurkic is on Russell Westbrook when he had been guarding Anthony Davis the rest of the game. Nope. They put their setter on Russell Westbrook to start the game. And this is what the Lakers did against the Houston Rockets back in the 2019-20 playoffs. They put Anthony Davis on Russell Westbrook. And then Jason Kidd did what teams have done to the Lakers in the playoffs in the past, is he played the defensive style that Pete described, which is basically like a shell drill.
It's like high school defense. It's so strange to see it in the NBA, man.
Well, it's yes. And when the Lakers go 10 for 41 on threes, and LeBron can't make a three at all, and LeBron led the Lakers in minutes. I think he played 48 or 49 minutes. He did not play the previous game. LeBron did not have a good basketball game against the Mavericks. And that was not just a crunch time problem. It was an all game problem. He got blocked several times at the rim. He did not have his typical lift. He did not have his typical burst in transition. And the rustiness that Mike described to start the game, that permeated throughout the entire contest for LeBron. He never shook it. And he's LeBron James. He's great. And so when you look at his last stat line, it's just like, oh my God, LeBron, 24 points, 16 rebounds, 9 assists. But he needed 28 shots to score those 24 points. He did not get a friendly whistle. We could talk about the refereeing or not talk about the refereeing. The Lakers were talking about the refereeing after the game. I know Mike asked some questions about the refereeing because it was on everyone's mind. But the crunch time problems are, they will come down to, can the Lakers make a jump shot?
Yes.
Like, can you make one?
When you're open.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, Mike, because, and this is where I'll kick it to you, because Russ made a very important three-pointer. And Wayne Gabriel hit a very important three-pointer. Like, LeBron drove, and when everyone is playing at the elbows and at the lane line, like, they're going to rebound a free throw. And this is their, seriously, and this is this is their half-court defense. That's what it looked like to me. And LeBron is at the elbow, and he was just like, okay, well, I'm just driving. Oh, look, there's a guy right in front of me, and I'm at the elbow, and there's two guys right here. I'm kicking it to Wenyan. I think it was LeBron who passed to Wenyan, but it might have been Russ. Either way, the ball got kicked to Wenyan, and he's like, well, I'm wide open. I'm shooting this three. They needed that from those guys. And so it's like the jump shooting needed to be better last night. It's been better than what it was last night, but last night was the bad part of things. And it's only amplified by the fact of like the players that were missing. Like throughout that game, Mike, I thought like, oh, it would have been nice to have Austin Reeves this game, or it would have been nice to have Lonnie Walker. Those guys can hit a jump shot. Well, right. But anyways, please.
Yeah, so it's funny because in all of my discussions about shooting and how I think it can be overrated in the way that we talk about it, I've almost never put LeBron into that mix because, like, LeBron, there are certain players that, even though that's ever been his best skill, right? His perimeter shooting has never been the part of his game, and he's still, you know, a top two player of all time. And like, if you look at the top 10 to 15 players of all time, there are very few of those guys where shooting is their best skill. Mm-hmm. Steph, mm-hmm. if we're going to put him in that one. I mean, so Larry Bird, you know, like Larry Bird was an incredible shooter, but I don't know if it was his best skill. I'm trying, like KD, you know, maybe.
Right. That, yeah, there are maybe. A few guys that are up there, but it's not the most prominent skill, like amongst those guys. Yeah, for sure.
And those guys that we're mentioning are like Steph's sort of an exception, but, you know, Bird and Durant were pretty much good at everything else too, right? Like mm-hmm. great rebounders, great passers. Bird not as good of a defender, but smart. So anyway, that's part of it. But like for LeBron, you know, he didn't shoot the ball well in clutch situations when they won the title. And in fact, I just looked this up now because it sort of surprised me. But even during the postseason, like LeBron was 3-for-16 in crunch time, 18.8%, and 0-for-5 from three. But Anthony Davis was 6-for-8 and 2-for-3. And like KCP was 1-for-9 from three in those situations. Like, and they won the title that year. And that's just talking about the bubble. Okay, where everybody talks about how the Lakers shot the lights out. So, it's hard for any team to hit jump shots in crunch time, first of all. But, like, where to try to pull that back to this season and what LeBron's struggles have been in those situations, and especially from three. And part of the issue for me with the threes, and he's taken 17 of them. Russ has taken 8. Schroeder is now 0-for-7, by the way, from three in crunch time, and 4-for-14 overall. It's just that they... like the guy that used to be able to at least unlock some of those was still LeBron, or he could just get to the rim if it wasn't working. And the same thing, Kobe used to do the same thing. Kobe, I always felt like, was an underrated finisher because we always talk about his jump shooting. But when Kobe wanted to get to the bucket, he was strong enough to take the contact and he could finish in whatever way he needed to. Left hand, right hand, like short floater, long floater, finger roll, dunk, reverse. He had all of that stuff. And so does LeBron. And it's just that I think in year 20, it's a little bit harder for him to get to the paint, even though he still does it at a great rate. Like, this is what's so, it's like a complicated conversation, but teams are just continuing to overplay. And it, to me, that's where it's more LeBron and Russ together being in a lot of those crunch time situations. And whereas in the bubble type group, you could have, you know, you might have a non-shooter the way the team covered them in Caruso, but he was getting so few of those out, and he was so smart about what he was doing off the ball, or like he'd set a screen on the weak side of the floor to get to free somebody. That's the type of stuff that I don't know if I see Russ doing as much. And so that's where it's like the build of it. If teams are going to totally crank in on the paint on one guy, which would be LeBron, but then Russ is out there too, it just seems like there's so much less space that the jump shots that you're getting are harder than where you would get like the drive and kick to a shooter type.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I think on yesterday's pod we talked to, you know, and that's one of the reasons I've landed on the idea that we need a really good jump shooter, professional jump shooter, to help alleviate that great deal of congestion in the paint. That said, if we're just talking about yesterday's game, I thought Russ was really good, including his jumper. He hit three threes in the game, hit a couple of mid-range shots as well. And so he was really productive. I thought he was our best defender on Luka. So I agree globally speaking, but LeBron's also got to hit jump shots, you know? And
yeah, that's true for yesterday. I'm trying to, like, yesterday's game, you're right. And you're right about Russ, but this has happened 9 times this year.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
And that's what I'm trying to get to. It's moving forward. Teams are still going to play the same way. And most of the time, I think teams would be pretty happy with Russ taking those shots.
Yes. Which is why ideally we can get that to flow into somebody they wouldn't be happy with taking those shots, because the reality is they're also pretty happy with Dennis Schroeder taking those shots and Troy Brown taking those shots and whomever is getting those shots, right? Like, they're crowding the paint to a degree that makes a closeout all the way to a three-point shooter, a really good one, impossible. And so whoever that ball ends up with, we just don't have a lot of guys that is the main reason why they're in the NBA, is their jump shooting. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get into the fouling up three question.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Yeah, I can't believe we've never talked about this, D, but Lakers are up by 3 points with 6 seconds left. Dallas does not have a timeout because in a brutally officialed game, in a brutally refereed game, the ref somehow missed that it was that it was Russell Westbrook that got fouled and sent Dennis Schroeder to the free throw line. And so Dallas had to challenge that, and it was unsuccessful, even though they ended up sending Russ to the line when they were initially going to send Dennis to the line. So Dallas did not have any timeouts left, which is a big swing point for me on this discussion. So no timeouts left, 6 seconds left. Luka's inbounding the ball to Spencer Dinwiddie. Luka's being guarded by Russ, Dinwiddie guarded by Dennis. Luka gets the switch on to Dennis, which Mike referred to in the post game with Darvin, where he was like, yeah, we should have blitzed that one. That's on me. Luka hits him with the step back, knocks down the three. Where do you stand on that whole topic of fouling up three? What do you believe in terms of the management of that type of situation?
So this is where it gets tricky, because you described it as 6 seconds. 6 seconds is how much time was on the clock after Luka hit the shot. There was actually 11.8 seconds at the inbound.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah.
So that's a lot of time. And so this is where other parts of game strategy are also important. So the Lakers aren't one of the ills of last night's game, especially, was the fact that the Lakers did not hit their free throws. Russ hit two important ones right before that. But overall, the Lakers shot 50-something percent from the free throw line, or 60%. But they were in the 50s for a long time, and Dallas didn't shoot free throws particularly well either this past game. So I could understand in this instance, with 11 seconds left on the shot clock, or with 11 seconds left on the game clock, for example, that you don't necessarily want to get into a free throw shooting contest with that much time left on the clock, because the odds of you potentially needing to make four free throws in order to win this game, that's up there, right? Like, I'm saying, like, you may go to the line two more times, Mike, and have to hit all four of those in order to win. That said, I thought I am up for fouling when you know that when the ball gets inbounded, there's basically no other action that's going to be run. So the fact that Dallas was able to start to get into their action, I would have wanted to foul around that 6 second mark, which is when the shot actually went through the basket. And so I get Darvin wanting to play it straight and not foul at that point. So I am a proponent of fouling, but I'm a proponent of fouling when you're getting down in the clock a little bit more, which makes it tricky. Like, I think there's a window to foul. And I thought when the play started, the Lakers were outside of that window. Right. And so that's sort of where my mind is around that. I'm more in line with what Darvin said, which was when that screen comes, I think they need to trap and they need to be ready to rotate out of that trap. Right now, Dallas did a very good job of spacing the floor, and they sent their two best shooters to the same side of the floor after the screen, which isn't a coincidence. Right. It's just like
Dinwiddie, it's an anticipation of the blitz.
Yes. So Dinwiddie comes and sets the screen on Dennis,
or on Russ.
Russ, excuse me. So Russ is guarding Luka. Come and set the screen. And now Dennis gets the switch. And the Lakers, you could tell that was the plan, Mike. Like, and because Dennis was looking at Russ, and Russ was already calling out, like, you're that, like, that's you. Mm-hmm. You're staying. But that to me is, that's where I'm with Darvin in that I thought the game plan was, we're switching everything. Whereas I think the game plan needed to be, if they come and set that ball screen, you jump him instantly and be ready to rotate out of that, like, instantly, right? And the Lakers, I thought, were well positioned to do that with LeBron being the rotating man, because that's who you want rotating right there. You want the biggest, most athletic dude that you have who actually hasn't played 10 additional minutes at that point. LeBron was at 38 minutes at that point of the game. He would have had his legs, I think. And so where are you at, though, with that?
Yeah, my precursor to this is that, as you guys know, a lot of the time that I spend is listening to the coaches talk before and after the game. And over the years, and I don't think there'll ever be a coach that I enjoy as much as Phil Jackson. And so I was very lucky to get that for my first several years. And I remember Phil getting asked about this and other things. But of all of the coaches that have been asked this question, there is not consensus. And what that tells me
exactly, yeah,
is that there isn't a right answer. And to me, it's the analogy that I would make would be to going forward on fourth down in football. And there's been this new wave in if you sort of just were a peripheral NFL fan and you think, oh, a lot of these up and coming young coaches, they're just going for it all the time because they're looking at the numbers and the analytics say.
Can I just jump in real quick? I watch the 49er games every weekend with my dad, and he's that kind of fan, right? Where back in the day, like going for it on fourth down was like, and so there have been some games this season where he's like, what the hell are they doing? It's like fourth and four and they're on their own 45 yard line. So that's totally spot on.
But here's the thing. Sometimes it's the right thing to do. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes we just play the results. And I hate, that's what I can't stand.
Oh, yeah.
I can't stand playing the results. So I'm not, like, I think it's important to have a philosophy, and a coach might lean, you know, 60-40 or 70-30. For example, if I'm the Golden State Warriors, I'm almost always falling because I have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole. And it's in, like, back when, even the days that they had KD, like the free throw shooting that you think you're going to be able to get, that is going to lead me to foul a little bit more. In the case of the Lakers and this current personnel, and even the bubble year, I would be a little bit less wanting to put myself in free throw contest, unless, like Pete just pointed out, the other team doesn't have timeouts. And then in that case, if they can't advance the ball, you know, so this is where it has to be a game to game, moment to moment,
yes,
a little bit feel, a little bit philosophy, and you have to have somebody that's good at doing it. And then you also have to get a little lucky, because let's say you blitz Luka, and then you're probably leaving Tim Hardaway Jr. for a wide open three, or Reggie Bullock for a wide open three. And if they hit that, then it's like, oh, shouldn't have blitzed. Why don't you just foul?
Yeah, or leave a shooter open.
And they hit both, and then you can't inbound to anybody but Russ, and then he splits the free throws. And then they, like Darius said, then if they have 7 seconds or 6 seconds, well, that is enough time maybe to get up and get a two. So all of that stuff comes into play, and I'm never going to get into the point where I'm blaming the coach too much, unless it's something like last night's, I did think was more of an obvious you should foul. And I think there are probably a couple of players that thought that they should foul in that situation. I just wanted to convey the complexity of it and not try to pretend like we're all geniuses if we play the results.
Thank you for doing that.
The complexities are also amplified by the fact that it's Luka Doncic. So
that's what I was going to bring up, is like, all of that's true in the consensus. It's like, I don't want to leave my fate in the hands of, I hope Luka Doncic misses this clutch shot over Dennis Schroeder in particular, you know?
Yeah, but also, Pete, Luka Doncic's ability to shed defenders, right? And so here's where, like, there was an opportunity to foul Luka right at the point of the screen, because everyone is close to him at that point, right? But once you start to slide your feet with this dude, anyone who has played defense in their life, once you are committed to, like, I'm gonna slide with you. So Dennis needed, like, Luka needed to catch the ball, and you just need to run up to him and foul him.
What I think, because part of the one of the downsides of blitzing is that Luka's bigger than both of the guys that are blitzing. So like one of the things about on ball traps is you want high hands. That's one of the things you to force both deflections, but also passes that have a little more arc on them. Neither guy that's blitzing in that situation can bother Luka's pass. And so, yeah, basically you're choosing between what we saw happen and giving up that wide open three that Mike was talking about to one of the other shooters. So to me, it's a matter of like, you blitz that, but you go for the steal. Because one thing you also don't want to do is to foul him after his gather and send him to the line shooting three free throws. So like, you go for the steal, maybe you get that 5% of the time, 10% of the time, but it's either you get the steal or you foul him before his gather type of thing. That to me is like the best of the options, but I love that also that you guys have brought up just like the degree of debate that this engenders amongst people that really know their hoops.
Yeah, and I just thought that once Luka got into his dribble, it was too late to try to foul. He's too big and he's too strong and he's too crafty with the ball. And so,
true,
but please, Mike.
I want you to continue, but that's why what you don't want is Dennis Schroeder to be the guy that is the matchup there to switch out, because he's just not tall enough to bother the shot. He can bother Luka's dribble sort of, but even then he's not going to steal the ball. So that's the thing that you have to try to avoid, is that getting that particular switch. Even if it's Russ or LeBron or somebody that can at least sort of contest a little better. That's all.
Yeah, this is where I hate to like, oh, well, out coach or out this or out that. It's just like, I honestly don't care. Like, Darvin had a philosophy in place. He said it when he answered your question. I had confidence in the five guys that were on the floor to get a stop. And he did just that. And Luka hit an incredible shot. Like, it really was an incredible shot. Like, I know that we can break down all of the ways in which the Lakers could have done something different and maybe better. But the fact is Luka drove hard to his right hand. He got a defender off of him, a smaller defender, but he got him off of him. Stepped back a good 2 or 3 feet. And Dennis recovered well enough to try to get a hand up. But Luka hit a step back 25 footer. Right.
While playing every minute of the second half, too. Like, his legs were fried. He shanked a couple free throws. Like,
well, he hadn't scored in the fourth quarter up to that point.
Yeah.
And he was so tired. Then, he was just kind of letting Hardaway Jr. Or Dinwiddie initiate offense. Yeah.
That's what the great ones do.
You're totally right. And LeBron said the same thing. He's like, look, you know, there were plenty of – because that's the one of the things where you could have, should have, would have. But the Lakers blew all kinds of chances on the other end. And Luka didn't. And that's why he won.
Yes.
Yep.
The Lakers had 2 3-point leads. They had a 3-point lead at the end of regulation. They had a 3-point lead towards the end of the first overtime. Luka hit 3-point shots. Both of them step back threes from the top of the key. Fairly difficult shots in order to tie the game both times. What is going to go unremarked on, mostly, because it is about Luka and he did what he did. I'm very interested to see what the last 2-minute report says. I never go to that page, but I'm interested this time for one reason, not because the Lakers lost, but because that game was a not very well officiated game. Brutal. Pete mentioned it earlier, and it was both ways. So
LeBron, it's not, yes.
LeBron drove Mike on a play. He drove left. He stumbled over his own feet and he fell down. Tim Hardaway was guarding him and he drew a foul on that. I think that was in the first overtime. It might have been the second overtime, but it was very late in the game. LeBron was super fatigued. He tried to drive. He fell down and that was a foul. There were lots of reviews where there didn't need to be reviews. There were lots of whistles blown where it's just like, wait, is this really the call here? And the Lakers had the ball with 6 seconds left and Troy Brown got off a shot. He got hand-to-hand contact. That much is clear. And I'm very interested to see what the last 2-minute report says, because the pool reporter who got to speak with the referee after the game, which is what happens, I think, I don't know if this happens every game, but I know it happens in close games.
You just have to request it, and then one of the reporters goes over. Yeah, I think it was Wiki last night.
Yeah, and so the referees were fairly confident that they got the call right. And I am less confident in that after seeing the replay multiple times, but I'm not a league official. I don't work in Secaucus. I am not trained by whoever the head of officiating is for the National Basketball Association. So I'll be interested to see what the last 2 minute report says. But
where does that call fall on the displeasure scale? I feel like I have to start pumping this more because you just don't bring it up on your own. And I wonder if you added new things to the displeasure scale? Did something happen in your most recent travels, you know, that bumps up like the, you know, who microwaved fish, or on the slower end, like used to rip a guy, now he's on the team. You know what I'm saying? I just haven't checked in on this in a while.
Used to rip a guy and now he's on the team. I like that one. Is that your own addition to the displeasure scale? Did I?
No, that was yours.
Okay.
It's even like in Darius language. Yeah, it's used to rip dude. Now dude is on my team.
Oh.
Yes.
Number 9.
That does sound like Darius.
I remember that one now.
Number 7 is check. You know where that one originates. On.
Just for new listeners or even old listeners who have not heard about the displeasure scale in a while, I spent an entire summer telling people if the Lakers end up with Carlos Boozer and Byron Scott, Carlos Boozer as a player and Byron Scott coaching this team, there's going to be a lot of expletives. Like right after that. And I was saying this openly, just mocking the basketball gods, Pete. Like,
oh yeah, Boozer was like, definitely going to be a Laker at some point.
Like,
yeah.
Please spite me, basically.
Yeah. I do that sometimes
it's fine. I was inviting it.
Yeah.
And they rewarded me with
they never let you down. No.
Oh, man. So that's where that one comes from, by the way.
They let, so you guys, again, remember, you are Laker fans, okay? So I'm just saying, relativity has to come into play here. The basketball gods have been okay to Laker fans. That's all.
They've been great to us. We've had a few of them on the team, actually. A few of the basketball gods on the actual team.
Exactly.
I'm just saying that when it's time to show a little bit of spite, they will spite you just to put you back in your place. And I feel that, like, look, I've been blessed. I say it all of the time. So that's where that one comes from. Thanks for the little reminder, Mike. I don't know. It's just like the refereeing, there probably is a displeasure scale, and Pete feels me with this one. Like, obvious call that needs to be replayed, and now we're sitting here for 5 minutes. Like, how do you feel? Like, you're doing radio, Mike. How do you feel the time? Because I was listening to the Spectrum broadcast, and they're sitting there just like, oh, let's bring up some random Luka fact right now. It's just like they got nothing because you're sitting there for 5 minutes.
Well, so first things first, I spent the first minute just railing about the fact that they were doing it, which I don't
good
get to
you,
do on
Mike.
TV.
Thank you.
So yes. Yeah, and I said yes. So the play happens, and we're talking about the Luka and Russell Westbrook one later,
yes.
Or the other. Yeah.
No, the play where they brought the ball up, Russ tried to they were trying to run out the clock. Dennis passes it to Russ, and then Russ.
Shoot? Yeah.
And who was going to shoot the free throws? Because that took forever.
How do you not know who, who got called the foul? So
first
you called
of all,
the foul.
For that one, I had had to come. So this is when, like, I had had to come down waiting to do the walk-off. So I was not on radio. I was standing next to the PR staff, and then, like, Rob Pelinka was right over. And so they don't have the – I have the broadcast in my ear, though. At this point, I have the TV broadcast. So they're all asking me, like, what are they saying? What does the replay look like? And I was like, well, it's going to be Russ that shoots. You know, and then 6 minutes later, it ends up being Russ that shoots, right?
Jesus.
But I what I was saying when I was on the air was when Russ bumped into Luka. And I'm talking to John, and I'm just like, all right, they're going to go review this. It's how about we just keep the fun basketball momentum going? I don't think that was a flagrant foul. It was unnecessary, yes, but like Luka was fine. Luka didn't even fall over. And it ended up, the basketball god said, then he missed both free throws and they missed the shot, which could have essentially screwed the Lakers in the game and the Lakers got the ball back. But all of that could have been essentially averted. And instead we had however long that took that the refs had to go over because by the book or whatever, you have to review it. So I was openly bitching about that for a good 3 minutes.
I'm so glad that we've at least moved on from the reviewing every single out of bounds play in the last 2 minutes of a game that where the last part of a game takes 30 minutes. Right? Yeah, the circle, the finger circle
worst.
Type thing. And But the NBA continues to be overly legalistic and missing the point of like, yo, this is a good ass basketball game that you've now paused for 6-7 minutes to review this thing where it's like, there's so many possessions in a basketball game that I get in the last few seconds or whatever, but the super long reviews like that are antithetical to like, yeah, and against the spirit of the entertainment product too. Even aside from the like purity of basketball and all the stuff that we talk about, it's like people are watching this to have fun. There are people on the East Coast that are like, it's 1 a.m. right now and y'all are taking 6 minutes to review this play. Like, I don't know. I just feel like it's like aggressive to your fans in a lot of ways that's just not necessary.
Mike, low level, very low level. So this is maybe the bottom rung of the displeasure scale.
But number 10 is kids brought home Halloween candy and it's all candy corn. That's number 10.
Okay. So number 11. So this number 11 then is NBA referee calling a transition take foul on a play that is clearly not in transition. Transition is in the name, Mike. So the play in which you're describing that Russ got called for the flagrant, they called that a take foul. When Luka is walking, he's walking the ball up the court. There's a guy in the backcourt, Powell, I think, was going to set a screen for him in order to free him up, right? Like, and
literally the opposite of a transition opportunity.
it was a missed free throw. And no one was running. Everyone was already up the court. Yeah. The defense was almost set.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a live ball. It was off of a missed free throw. Like, there is no such thing as there was no transition in that play. And it's in the name. The referee went to the on TV, Mike, and he said, this is being ruled a transition take foul, and we're reviewing it for a flagrant, and transition is right there in the name. If he wouldn't have said transition right there in the name, I don't even think I'd be as mad, but he used it as the verbiage to describe the play when it's not even, that's not transition.
Well, this is where the basketball gods agreed and forced Luka to miss both free throws, Reggie Bullock to miss a wide open three. So which proved us all right in that case. And then
so that's number 11. That's number 11 is the misinterpretation of your own point of emphasis rule that is brand new that you're trying to do. It's like, remember when the clear path foul like was first instituted? This was what, maybe 15 years ago at this point. Mm-hmm. And like the very first season of that, I felt like it was chaos in terms of like how often they had, like they were trying to call it. And so like, maybe this is growing pains with this, but like they're calling take fouls on so many plays that I don't really think are take fouls because it's actually not transition.
Yeah. But I do mostly like the take foul though, as an addition.
Me too.
I think but you're right. In that case, I can't disagree. I only want to say one thing in defense of referees. And I've told you guys this before, but my first job was a soccer ref. I liked it. And especially I liked center reffing and I liked the pressure and I liked when people would try to yell and I liked having a chance. Cause I like a little confrontation in that sense, as long as it's a certain level of respect. These refs, especially last night when you got Luka on one end and you got LeBron on the other, I mean, there is no call they can make without getting yelled at by a really powerful, great player and the rest of their teammates. And I think that for some refs handle that fine and like a Zach Zarba type and kind of like can roll with it and talk about it. And some refs, when you keep going at them all the time, it's just going to influence calls. And I think for the collective, not necessarily just Lakers or Mavs. And so I just, whenever we think about the refs and we're ripping them, remember, you are getting screamed at by powerful people no matter what you do, no matter how you make the call, you're going to get yelled at. And they may even have a good point because it's hard. So I just like to sprinkle that in while also agreeing with the fact that the refereeing was poor. I don't know if it helps the referees to just completely get thrown off guard by getting yelled at as if they had, created nuclear war or something.
Yes, but that is part of the job, and you don't get yelled at if you you know who the guy that you actually you know who like you actually called the foul on, or the player that actually got fouled. Anyway, that was a mess of a game refereeing wise. I wish we would have won that. Freaking hell. That's one of the things from being a basketball coach too, is you referee a ton of your own games, right? And that's always an awkward position when you're the head coach, but it's also like kids in the heat of the moment that are like, what? That's not a foul, but you're also their coach. Anyway, I've refereed my fair share. I definitely get where you're coming from. That game last night though was a hot mess. Anyway, we've gone long.
My favorite story about that, about a head coach reffing their own game, is when Phil Jackson basically set up the whole like Michael Jordan punches Steve Kerr, right? And like how MJ was basically just like, Phil out here purposely calling bad calls and letting these guys get away with it, and just the buildup and the buildup and the buildup. I know that you love a good Phil story, Mike, and so Phil was the best at basically like manipulating everyone to get the outcome.
Dude, Phil is a genius, man. He was. That's a whole separate thing. But I know Pete went through some practices not calling fouls for his best player.
Oh yeah,
And you know, and trying to piss him off. So it's a classic trope there.
We would have actually specific games where it was told beforehand, like, you're gonna have to really get creamed for a whistle to get blown. You're gonna have to play through contact in this one. So anyway, we've gone super long. We got to wrap it up. Lakers come back on Sunday. We will be back on Monday in between a back to back to discuss how it goes. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance.
Right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
Bryant,
for the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant, yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.